Valor Doharis. Welcome back to the Faceless Men podcast covering HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Jesse.
Before we drop into the episode, we want to give a shout out to the people who create our music. Created by Remix Fix, and you can find them on soundcloud.com/remix-fix. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/facelessmencast. You can find us on Twitter at facelessmencast. And you can find us on Google Plus. Just look for Faceless Men Podcast. So, Jesse, this is episode 2. The thing that everyone has been waiting for happened this episode. The title is The Lion and the Rose. It was directed by Alex Graves, who returns from last season. And this is the episode written by George R. R. Martin. So usually he kind of waits until like the 8th or 9th episode or something like that. But this time he got in early. Original air date was April 13th, 2014. And this episode did not lose any steam. The season premiere kicked it off with 6.6 million viewers. And this one only dropped down to 6.3 million viewers.
Wow.
I think that's quite phenomenal on HBO's part. I'm sure they're all excited about the amount of ratings that they're getting. Of course, this is the number one pirated television show as well.
Probably don't even include those. I don't even know how they begin to track that.
I'm sure that there are people tracking it. People like FBI, record companies, you know, the usual suspects. So again, this is directed by Alex Graves. I'd just like to mention that he directed the episodes And Now His Watch Is Ended and Kissed by Fire. I think both of those were very Jon Snow-centric episodes. A lot of stuff happened in the North. So what happens at the beginning, we get a Previously On clip, and we see the Oberyn-Tyrion exchange. We see the Dantos-Sansa exchange. We see Shay being found out. We see the Reeds and Bran from previous season. We see the Melisandre-Stannis shadow baby from previous seasons. We see the Gold Hand for Jaime. And we looks like we're going to catch up with the Boltons and Theon.
Looks like we're going to catch up a lot of characters they were missing in the first episode.
Yeah, so the only guy that we haven't seen yet that wasn't on the previous on-cut, I think, is the spider.
Yeah. Well, we've already seen the episode. He's in it. He's there.
He's there. He's there, but he's not in the previously on. Then we see the opening sequence. Doesn't look like there's anything new there. Though, we do visit the two castles that were missing from the last storyline, and that's the Dread Fort and Dragonstone. So they're in the opening credits for the first episode, for the season premiere, but we never actually visited there. Speaking of the Dread Fort, that's where we started off the episode. Why don't you describe what's happening up in the north there, some of the sick, sadistic stuff.
It looks like they're hunting someone. Hunting a girl.
Yeah, they got everything out, dogs and everything.
Theon limping around behind them.
I was going to say, speaking of dogs, they have a lame one following behind them, Dickless Theon. It looks like he's still having issues moving around.
Adjusting to his new form.
Yeah, I think the flaying probably has taken a physical toll. I don't know if he'll ever recover, do you?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it'll probably be a gimp the rest of his life. Oh, wait a second. We shouldn't be calling him Theon. He's got a new name now. What is it?
Reek.
Reek. So yeah, so Reek is obviously fucked up. We see what, Miranda? Is that Ramsay's?
I didn't catch the name.
Ramsay's girlfriend, Miranda, or something like that. So they're hunting down some girl they must have...
I'm guessing a serving maid or someone from the village nearby that just...
Oh, I think it was a bed partner. I can see these two doing the nasty with a third person here. I guess this girl made Miranda jealous or something.
And that's or we're something.
We're hunting her down now. Not a lot to talk about here other than, hey, these guys are sick bastards. And, hey, so's Ramsay's girlfriend. Is also a sick bastard. I don't know.
Maybe those two are related.
Very well. It could be.
There's enough of that going on here with...
There is a lot of that sister fucking going on, or cousin fucking, or whatever. Nothing is off limits in Westeros. If we could see it, they actually let the dogs eat the girl. Those are well-trained dogs.
Yeah, just sitting there, barking, just and they chase her down.
Yeah, I mean, they don't obey...
Don't immediately start feasting.
That's right, they obey commands pretty well. I wonder if Reek shares a kennel with them.
Probably. I think they even mention that at one point, don't they?
Do they?
Somewhere in there.
Well, it would fit along with everything else they've done to him. So, after the dog's feast, we find ourselves back in King's Landing, where we have Tyrion and Jaime having dinner. Looks like Jaime's having a hard time adjusting to his hand.
I like this scene.
What do you like about the scene?
I like the interplay between Tyrion and Jaime. It seems like Tyrion is trying to bolster Jaime's spirit.
Is he trying to bolster his
spirit?
But
also, he's getting some digs in
there. Okay, I was gonna say, yeah, he's kind of like taking both sides. I do think that he is trying to kind of raise his spirits, you know, make light of the situation. I think he's obviously enjoying having his brother back, so, you know, Jaime's been missing for quite some time.
I think he enjoys it a little bit bit that Jaime's now crippled.
It brings them on the same level now, you know, so it kind of levels the playing field.
Didn't you ask him, how's your new hand?
Oh, yeah. Your new hand is nicer than the old one. And then he asked Pod, wouldn't you agree? Wouldn't you agree, Pod? So nice.
Chimes in with, is that all solid gold?
that's right. Is it solid gold? Which we had a question last episode that you thought maybe it was gold plated.
Yeah.
And I was like, they don't have that technology, but I was wrong. So they have something gilded. Similar. It's gilded steel. So I get the mental imagery that they've melted gold and kind of brushed it on.
Yeah. Or gold, you know, decorated.
Or melted gold and dipped the hand into it or something.
Maybe it's some kind of alloy too.
It could be an alloy.
Someone will correct us on that.
Yeah, I don't know what gilded steel means in the Westerosi as far as technology in Westerosi goes. So, you know, it's steel and gold. Did you catch that they're serving boar?
Yeah.
So I guess it's like boar must be on the menu or something ever since Cersei, you know, Cersei can't get enough of it is what Tyrion was saying ever since Robert was killed by one. So I thought that was a nice way to remind folks of things that have happened, you know, kind of tie everything together. It's a nice little detail. And Tyrion gives an interesting description of the three Lannister kids. You remember what it was?
Oh, yeah. The dwarf, the cripple, and the mother of madness.
Yes, the mother of madness.
I think we can all agree with that. Joffrey is a psychopath. Let's just say.
I bet that was the name of a chapter in one of these books. I can't believe it's not the name of the episode.
Yeah, Mother of Madness.
That would have been great.
Especially what happens later.
Because it reminds me of an earlier episode called Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things.
Yeah, that would have been a good title here.
Well, it was a title post-Bran, right? Where Bran being pushed out of the window. I think that was the title of an episode. Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things. Because it had to do with Cripple, Tyrion, the Bastard, Jon Snow, and Broken Things.
Bran.
George R. R. Martin did a nice job of tying all these elements back together across, I don't even know how many books it's been at this point, two or three.
Yeah, I think this is the third one, I think.
Yeah, who knows? Hey, we'll have to come back to Jesse's
two-week
challenge at the end of this episode. So stay with us, and we'll get a brief description of where Jesse's at and where he's going. So during the dinner, Jaime dumps the wine. Not quite used to the gold hand, the steel hand, so it's very awkward. And Pod, of course, you know, is like, I'll take care of that, but Jaime dismisses Pod. And then what does Tyrion do?
Pours out his own wine.
Yeah.
Reminds him, hey, it's just wine.
It's just wine.
This is not that big a deal.
Right, it's just wine. But Jaime actually confesses something. He confesses that, you know, he's not quite confident in his ability to do his job.
Which is not the bluster we've seen from him so far.
Right, it's not, you know.
He told Tywin, you know.
Exactly.
That's not the brave face he's putting on in public.
Which is interesting. He's a little bit more candid with Tyrion, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think he actually, out of all the Lannisters, Jaime has the best relationship with Tyrion. Would you agree?
Somewhat. After all, he's not betting Tyrion. Or at least he wasn't.
Well, you know, yeah, he's not putting his dick in Tyrion.
I don't know if that necessarily makes a good relationship, though.
Right. I think even including the even-handed Jaime, even if you go that far back, I would still say that Jaime has the best relationship with Tyrion, though. I'm not talking about the best Lannister-to-Lannister relationship, but the best Lannister-to-Tyrion relationship. Jaime probably has the best Tyrion-to-Lannister.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think from where I was at in the books, Tyrion admits that Jaime actually treated him with some kindness. So.
Right. Because I think he kind of confides in him with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
As we can see here. Because he confesses that he can't fight anymore. How can I fight if I can barely wipe my own ass? And at that point, Tyrion's like, well, why don't you just train, dumbass? Why doesn't Jaime want to train?
Yeah, Jaime doesn't want anybody else to know anything about him having to retrain. He wants everybody to keep thinking all the lies, pretty much, that he's been telling.
Right, that he's still a badass.
Still a badass.
So he's afraid.
Not the case.
Right. Because he's afraid that, you know, the first guy he spars with is going to go shoot his mouth off about, oh man, that Jaime, he can't fight worth a shit anymore. But Tyrion offers up someone.
Yeah, he offers up a pretty good teacher.
That's right. So we cut to the next scene. He offers up someone with some discretion.
And it looks like it's his favorite mercenary, Bronn.
That's right. So I like Bronn. This scene is pretty good. Bronn has no fucking respect for any. You have to earn Bronn's respect.
Yeah.
And Jaime certainly hasn't earned it, because the first thing he does is throw his sword. Jaime's sword.
But this is after that comment Bronn made about Jaime asking him if this is a safe place, if anyone's going to find them here.
Yeah, well, how safe is it?
Apparently safe enough if Bronn can fuck some other knight's wife there.
That's right. I guess she's a screamer. So if they don't hear her, they won't hear them. Yeah, there's some nice, anytime Bronn's involved, there's definitely some nice verbal banter. Jaime starts out, Tyrion, you know, my brother tells me that, you know, you have, you know, some discretion or something like that. And of course, Bronn responds, well, he also tells me you shit gold just like your father.
In true mercenary fashion.
I'm sure he's one of your favorites. You're very mercenary, Jesse.
As I should be. This is acceptable.
Yeah, so they're fighting. You know, Jaime's a little bit disappointed that they're practicing with blunt steel instead of sharpened edges.
Yeah, Bronn disabuses him of that notion pretty quickly. He needs to be paid by someone.
Yeah. So if Jaime uses a sharp edge, then Bronn has to use a sharp edge. And if Bronn uses a sharp edge, then there'll be nothing, no one left to pay him. And so they start sparring. Of course, you know, Bronn fights dirty. And Jaime makes a quip about, you know, if he still had his right hand.
Bronn's like, if you're gonna regrow it.
Yeah. Plan on growing it back? Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So we leave them fighting on the beach and we go back up to the Dreadfort. Looks like Ramsay's father, Roose, has arrived. And Ramsay doesn't seem too happy. Why do you think that is?
No, I think he was on a bit of a power trip.
Oh yeah, he was on a big power trip, and one that his father, as we find out, is not very happy with.
As he gets his updates as he comes home.
Oh yeah, so it looks like there's a new Frey, or not a new Frey, there's a Frey that's a new Bolton, right?
Yeah, Walda?
Walda? Yeah. Which is obviously...
I'm not sure I caught the full exchange there, but it seemed like Bolton didn't look super happy.
Well, that was part of Bolton's deal when the whole Red Wedding went down, that he would end up marrying a Frey. So this is Ramsay's new mom.
That's what I thought he said, because I thought he kissed her and said mother. But
yeah, he did. But what I really thought he was saying was dinner. I think Ramsay's going to eat her.
Well, that would not surprise me.
Play her and eat her. I think that's what's going to happen. That poor woman does not know what she's getting into.
Nah, she married in the wrong family. That's for damn sure.
So, he wants to see his prize, but he's upset. Why is Roose all upset?
Oh, yeah, and then he gets upset because Theon looks a little too submissive. He looks broken.
Yeah, so he actually...
He even looks broken.
He termed it flayed. You flayed him. Which, the way he uses that term, and almost, it's not just peeling the flesh back from someone's fingers or something. It's like a process, right? It seems like a process.
The full torture breaking of spirit kind of thing.
Breaking a man down. Obviously reinventing him, so he's no longer Theon, he's Reek.
Now that differs from my understanding of what that term means.
Yeah, I thought flaying was just, you know, just the simple practice of,
stripping
somebody's skin.
Yeah.
But obviously Theon still has all his skin, his fingers don't look too mangled.
Yeah.
So it must be, you know, they must refer to it as the process of...
Oh, that's something interesting to mention that I don't think they've really pointed out. Apparently, Roose Bolton has a room full of his enemy's flayed skins, or at least that's a rumor. I read it in the books.
Oh, you read it in the books. Yes. Oh no, you're bringing book knowledge in here.
This is first book.
Okay, so it's way past. Yeah, well that wouldn't surprise me. He probably has all kinds of shit made out of flesh. Books, bedsheets.
If I was him, I would just go, I would have a chair.
Trousers.
I would have a chair. I have a chair with faces.
A chair of faces?
Chair of faces.
That's very Nazi of you, Jesse. So, but we found out Roose had plans for Theon, right? He's going to use him as a bargaining chip with the Greyjoys, because the Greyjoys hold a specific area that he had to sneak back past. He said he had to smuggle himself into his own lands, right? So it's the boat. And he was going to use Theon as a chip, but Ramsay informs he already did.
Yeah, and apparently he didn't get a good result either.
Yeah, and Roose is upset. Try to make the deal without running it by Roose first, right?
Yeah, and then his response is pretty good. You made me acting lord. I acted.
Yeah, right. But that doesn't assuage, you know, Roose says something about how he trusts him too much. Roose trusts Ramsay too much. As a kind of, well, you know, fuck you moment, Ramsay actually sits down and allows Reek to give him a shave.
Yeah, he says, puts the razor in his hand and continues bantering with his father while he orders Reek to shave him.
But that's not just it, though, right? It's not just a shave. They actually drop a bomb on him.
As they have not previously mentioned to him before, they tell him of Rob's death.
Yeah,
and how Roose is even the one that put the knife in his heart.
While the razor is on Ramsay's throat. Looks like he struggles for a little bit, but he continues on, and Roose is impressed.
I think he's completely broken. I don't think there's any redemption there for our Theon Greyjoy.
And on top of that, Ramsay gets Reek to provide some key information.
About these Stark boys.
Yeah, he confesses that he didn't actually kill the Stark boys, that they're still at large.
Yeah, Roose seems pretty happy about that.
Well, no, he doesn't seem happy.
Well, he seems happy about the chance of capturing them, at least.
Because it's definitely
if he seems happy about anything.
It's a monkey wrench in their plans, right? Just like Ramsay was saying, you know, the Starks have always ruled the North, and if the Northern people, their former bannermen, former Stark bannermen, find out that there's a Stark that's alive, they'll all rally around them, even though they're super young, right?
Yeah, with however much is left of whatever armies they have.
But Roose's deal with Tywin is that he gets to rule the North. So if there's Starks, then that will definitely impede, because, you know, the Lannisters aren't helping him take over the North. They're just like, yeah, you can have the North,
but if you, take
you have to take it. So that's definitely a huge problem for the Boltons if they want to become the new lords in the North.
They have to be able to get out of their own land.
That's true. So they have to deal with the Greyjoys. But they also bring up Jon Snow. So he's actually a Stark, or, you know, a bastard Stark, which leads them to believe that if the Stark children were going to go anywhere, they'd probably try to meet Jon Snow at Castle Black, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, they dispatch the guy who chopped Jaime's hands off to Castle Black to try to find Bran and Rickon. But then they also send, Roose sends Ramsay with Theon to take the moat.
Yeah.
This is where our debate comes in. This is the opportunity, he tells Ramsay. This opportunity will let him prove if he will, like, accept him as a full Bolton, right? How do you think Theon will play out at the moat
when I don't think Theon has anything left in him. I think he is truly broken. I think they could send him in there with whatever terms they wanted by himself to go talk to his father, and he would still walk back out. He is reek. There's nothing left of Theon Greyjoy there.
Man, I don't know about that. I think that that's a definite possibility, but at some point in the future, reek will betray Ramsay.
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah.
If he would have done it, he would have done, like, there's a point of despair there where you just say, fuck it, and you slit somebody's throat when you have a razor to it.
Yeah, but then he'd still die. So there's still the survival mode.
Yeah, you take someone with you, though.
Yeah, but that's not how most people think.
I guess I'm just too mercenary.
I guess you are too mercenary, man. But it may not be at the moat, so it may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, but I guarantee you, at some point in time in the future, reek will betray Ramsay.
Oh, this is where I was talking about. So Roose asked him where he kept his prize, and I think he said the kennels.
Really?
I'm pretty sure.
So this is where this is where we may or may not have found out that he lives with the dogs.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was a mention of that there.
Okay.
At the beginning of this scene.
All right. I don't think you're wrong, so it's a very good possibility. So after the Dreadfort, we go back to King's Landing, and we see the spider. Yay! So this pretty much, well, except for the Stark children, checks off another person that we haven't seen so far this season.
I wonder if they'll get back to Baelish soon.
Oh, we haven't seen him yet either, but we will when Sandor and Arya arrive there.
They don't appear in this entire episode, do they?
No.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
So I wonder, and there's probably going to be something coming to a head
which
there.
Which is fine. I've had problems before with a single episode jumping around too much, so I like it when they take some time to actually develop the characters and the plot lines. I don't mind, yeah, the whole...
Showing the characters every other episode.
Every other episode, I think, works pretty well. Maybe, you know, the central plot character to this story arc is in every or most episodes, but other than that, I totally give thumbs up to not showing every character every episode.
That's because, true. But there are some characters I just don't care about.
Well, then, when you jump around that many times,
one of them.
When you jump around that many times, the story kind of gets disjointed, you know, in your head. So
yeah.
Because you're not tracking one storyline long enough.
And that definitely makes the episode feel different when you're switching every 5 minutes.
Yes.
Different characters.
Yeah. So. It screws with the pace, I think. The spider returns, and it returns with grave news for Tyrion, right? But it's news we already knew, that Cersei now... So the whole Shay thing is blown. Cersei knows, which means Cersei's going to tell Tywin, and Tywin has promised to hang or kill any whore that Tyrion is with.
Yeah, Varys seemed to be giving him a little bit of a lecture there. Like, you know your duty, you gotta get her out of here.
Really? You think, well...
I think he was giving her a little bit, or giving Tyrion a little bit of a lecture there. Like, why is she still here?
He did do that.
He seemed put out a bit.
Tyrion asked the spider to do something, he's like, no, I'm not gonna do that. Oh, lie. He's like, I'm not gonna lie. Because as soon as, you know, if they find out that I've lied... And they will.
Nobody mourns the spider.
Right. Yeah.
But the spider's still here.
So the spider just listens. So yeah, he kind of did, you know, it's like, look, the spider did offer to set her up in Dorne or whatever, right?
Was it Pentos?
Or you're right. I keep thinking it's Dorne because that's where Cersei sent
Myrcella.
But it is Pentos. After that, we cut to scene, and it looks like Joffrey's having some kind of breakfast with his family and soon-to-be in-laws.
Looks like a bit of a bridal shower.
That's
what I'm going to call it.
It's the bridal shower breakfast or something.
Joffrey's such a bitch, it might as well be a bridal shower.
He's got some social graces. I was surprised. It must be the hand.
Yeah, I don't think any of that was Joffrey's social graces.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Tywin.
I mean, you know, psychopaths can be nice when they want to.
We see a couple things. First of all, there's father-in-law-to-be brings him a giant-ass gold goblet, which he accepts.
Who wouldn't want one of those?
Who wouldn't? That thing was fantastic. I'd love to have that. Tyrion gives him a stack of books.
And he looks so depressed when he gives it to him, like, I know, he's just going to toss these or burn them or something.
Joffrey says all the things that he needs to say.
He said something about, now that the war has ended, peace, here's the time for wisdom.
Yeah,
something like along that. Those lines.
Yeah,
something.
It was total bullshit.
And Tyrion's just like, wait, what?
Yeah, he was kind of like, I'm surprised. But then we come to Tywin's gift. So this is where we see the second sword from last episode. The ice, you know, ice was melted down into two swords. One went to Jaime, and then this piece of Valyrian steel went to Joffrey. And what does he do?
He whips it out and starts playing with it.
He does. He wants to name it, right?
Oh, yeah.
He wants to name it. What do they end up naming it?
Something, Maiden's Wail, I
Maiden,
think.
Or Widow's Wail?
Yeah, something along...
Something like that. Remember, folks.
Only wisdom... cunts name their swords.
That's right, the wisdom of Sandor. And he immediately begins chopping up the books Tyrion gave him. He has it out for Tyrion. I don't know what he just enjoys picking on that guy, his uncle.
I think he likes picking on anyone smaller than him or weaker. He considers weaker.
Right, and Tyrion's smarter, and he's embarrassed him a lot. You know, there's obviously a...
And then the slap. Yeah.
No love lost there. That's right, the slap. I think, yeah, Tyrion's still paying for that slap, isn't he?
Yeah. Comes up a point, because this sword is Valyrian steel.
Yeah.
Comes from ice, right?
Yes.
And he had a sword before. I remember him swinging around, and I think he called it a Heart Drinker.
Yeah, I thought that was Valyrian steel too, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe we're wrong on that.
Yeah, maybe we are. I still don't know what happened to that sword.
He probably lost it when he was cowering during the Battle of Blackwater.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, off the parapet or something, you know. Another thing happens during this, though. Tyrion overhears Cersei and Tywin conspiring to retrieve Shae, which leads us into our next scene. The big breakup. Shae thinks she's there to get it on, but Tyrion's there to call it off, and he's actually pretty mean, isn't he?
Yeah. This is the equivalent of Arya throwing rocks at Nymeria to get her to run away.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, he basically says all the shit that Tywin has said to him over the years, right? You know, whores aren't worthy of bearing your children. Because, you know, she won't leave, but her life's in danger and she doesn't believe it. And this is one of the reasons why I don't like the character, because I think it's obvious. If you spend more than 10 minutes in King's Landing, she should know that her life is in danger, because Tywin doesn't put up with shit. Cersei's a fucking psychopath.
Not only that, but she really doesn't have a place anymore. Her lover/husband is married off to someone else, and there is not a damn thing she can do about it.
Not a damn thing. So Tyrion breaks up with Shae, but do you think it was soon enough?
I don't know. That remains to be seen.
I don't think so.
That's when Bronn steps in and escorts her to the ship.
That's right. Bronn came in and she actually
at Tyrion's request,
face,
yeah.
Right?
She slaps him.
And then we go back to Dragonstone, and hey, man, this is an awesome, peaceful scene of people getting burnt at the stake.
Yeah. Just burning some people. It's no big deal.
Well, you know, their souls have been set free.
I don't know about this Lord of Light, but...
Where does the Lord take these souls?
Apparently to someplace nicer.
I guess so. It's weird. So, but you can see Davos is there, still counseling against Melisandre. Of course, Stannis is quick to remind him of his place, because Davos is talking about how, hey man, that dude was your brother by marriage, and he supplied you with all these ships and men. And then Stannis is like, yeah, more men than you've ever contributed. So
I don't think he likes this constant reminder, this constant bit of consciousness seeping back in.
Yeah, it's
Davos.
You're right, because it seems like Stannis is a man of honor, right? And rules. He has rules, he follows the rules, but Melisandre's corrupted him so much to think that these are the rules
That's what he no longer wants. That's,
yeah, he's...
His values have changed.
He has some internal conflict, right? So he thinks he needs to do whatever he needs to do to, get the damn throne, right? Because he deserves the throne because he's really the heir to it since he's the only true Baratheon left.
Following all the right laws.
Yeah.
Maybe for the wrong reasons.
He's definitely doing it for the wrong reasons. And then we see Stannis and Selyse and Melisandre having dinner. And Selyse is reminiscing about the siege, about how he boiled books.
Yep.
Because they have some
horse binding, horse glue.
They have some kind of nutritional value. But the best thing...
I wonder what the true nutritional value of books is. I can't imagine it's all that great.
But the most fantastic thing she's ever ate were grilled seagulls, which Stannis managed to shoot during the siege. And then, of course, she segues into how Shireen, their daughter, Stannis' and Selyse's daughter, is such a whore...
She calls her wretched, I think.
Wretched, that's right.
I can't remember. That might not be correct.
She's wretched, and she doesn't...
She's willful and stubborn, and...
That's right. Wretched.
You only
and
ever see the good side of her, because she... You only see every once in a while.
You know who's a horrid bitch? Selyse. That chick has some fucking issues. Do you remember...
She is lost in her own little world.
Do you remember the fetus jars?
That's pretty fucked up. Just fetus jars.
That's beyond fucked up, man.
Yep. And but then again, they're burning people here, so...
Right. This whole fucking thing is fucked up. So, Stannis takes a hard line, though, with about his daughter. Because it's almost like Selyse is hinting at, hey, maybe we should burn her at the stake. You think that's what she was kind of saying?
I think she was going there.
Yeah, so, but instead, you know, Stannis like, no. And then Selyse, I guess, as a final jab, is like, well, we'll just have Melisandre talk with her.
Melisandre didn't seem to warm up to that idea either. She's like, oh, sure.
What do you think about the Melisandre-Shireen scene?
I liked it.
You did? Yeah. What did you like about it?
I like Shireen kind of put it a little bit to her. What didn't she,
Yeah, she had lots of questions,
they had a nice little
right?
theological discussion, yeah.
She had lots of questions. So Melisandre is basically telling her that this book she read is bullshit, and it's about the seven gods. And of course, you know, she puts her own spin on it. One of the big things we learn here is that there's not seven heavens, and there's not seven hells. There's only one hell.
And it's the one they're living in.
Right. Very...
And heaven's the one we're going.
And there's only two gods, right?
Yes. A god of light and a god of dark.
So it's very... I can see a lot of... themes here that you can pick out of early Christianity where they're offering a paradise or something like that and, you know, a better life than the one you have here.
Hey, they burned people there too.
Hey, they did.
They called the Dark Ages.
So, Inquisitions and, you know, Salem witch trials. I mean, the list goes on. But even though there's two deities, it's still very, you know, monotheistic.
Yeah.
And you see, it's like the rise of monotheism over the old polytheism.
This ends in our discussion of, I don't think Melisandre is working for the Lord of Light at all.
Well, I don't know. That priest with the Brotherhood Without Banners knows her. And he is a priest of the Lord of Light, the guy that resurrected.
But didn't he only know her by, like, hearsay and third-party kind of stuff? I didn't think he knew her directly.
Well, they knew her well enough to give up Gendry.
Well, that's true. But didn't they pay for that? Didn't they pay for Gendry?
I think they did pay. Yeah. They did give them money. And then Arya was all upset.
Yeah. Didn't Shireen end that little conversation with, well, if they're going to heaven, why are they screaming?
Oh, yeah. She had some very...
pointed questions.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to heaven.
No.
I don't know what it is, but it's not good, whatever the hell's going on. If there's a heaven in this world...
Burning people, usually, as a rule, is pretty bad.
Yeah, so even if they do go to heaven, that's not the way to get there, man.
No, not a way I'd take.
I'd take Tyrion's way.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite way.
Drunken with whores. So we go almost to the wall. Actually, no, we're beyond the wall, or I guess there's some question. We don't know exactly if Bran is beyond the wall or on this side of the wall, but it seems like he's north, right? Because everything's snowy.
Yeah, I think he's actually beyond the wall.
But we see some warging going on. He's obviously in the mind of Summer, and Summer's killing a deer. But then he's waking up with a Hodor.
As is everyone.
But we learned some, this is interesting because we actually learned some new rules, right? About the warging thing. One of the rules is you can't spend too much time inside your animal.
Otherwise you start to become that animal. And or at least you lose your mind to them. That's some discussion there.
Yeah, we don't know exactly what happens. So either you come back and you're animal-like or you leave your body forever and you're all the time, you know, you're basically permanently inside their mind.
You are now that animal.
And we see, well, you think it was some telltale clues because of the way he snatched the food.
Yeah, I think he is showing some signs there because of the way he behaves, or at least what I think would be somewhat uncharacteristically of him, snatching the food when everyone's they're kind of rationing it.
Well, I guess my take was, one, they're hungry.
Well, yeah.
So, and two, he's pissed off because he can't walk.
Yeah, I don't think...
I don't know if it's necessarily...
I think that extra anger and extra aggression...
Well, because he can't fucking walk, man. Basically, it's like being snatched out of the dream where you're Superman and you have to come back and you're a fucking vegetable. You'd just be pissed off, just from that.
That is true.
I'm not saying that there's no credence to the whole animalistic traits thing. So they introduce these rules. And I have a theory, anytime they introduce rules, it's because of one or two things. One is that someone is going to break the rules and suffer the consequences. Or two, someone is going to break the rules and become something more.
Something super.
Right.
Super warg.
So a super warg. So what if Bran can break these rules?
That is a nice idea. He's already pretty powerful. We've talked about this before, and he warged into Hodor.
He did warg into Hodor, which is supposed to be impossible, right? You can't warg humans.
Or at least very difficult. Very difficult.
Well, it seems like when he did that, it was like, wow, no one's ever done that before. But of course, you know, Hodor is different. His mind does not operate the same as most people. But Hodor is a beast, man, because he's like pulling that sled all through, God, all through the north, man. He's a machine.
And this brings up something I'd like to see. I'd like to see Bran warg into a dragon.
A dragon. To stop you there, we get to the Godswood, right? And he communes with the Godswood to he figures out the direction he needs to go, which is north, which is not a whole lot clearer than what we've already known.
Hopefully he knows exactly where he's going, but...
But speaking of dragons, he has a vision, right?
Yeah.
He has a vision, and he sees the shadows of the dragons. It looks like over, you know, Marine or something like that. But he also has similar visions to the one I remember Dany had when she was in the, you know, caught by the necromancers or whatever. She was going through the tower.
Yeah.
And she had visions of the destroyed building with the Iron Throne and, you know, like ashes or what I think it's snow. I think it's snow because winter has come. To the Iron Throne, is what I think that vision is. Do you remember that vision that Dany had? I think they're very similar visions that
Not Bran... very clearly, no.
I think they're very similar to what Bran just had. But also, now he knows that dragons, they're dragons. Or at least, maybe he can't interpret that from the shadows, but we know they're dragons in his vision.
This goes back to something we talked about, too. Why is anyone concerned? There's gotta be rumors flying everywhere.
Surely reports have come back. Hey, we've had 3 cities sacked by dragons.
Yeah, there's someone somewhere.
That should be at the top of somebody's report.
Holy shit, we better do something.
Yeah, we did talk about that last episode, I believe. We'll leave the wall there, and we'll go back to King's Landing for the wedding. And Margaery looks stunning. That's one hell of a wedding dress she has on there. And of course, this kind of harkens back to the Tyrion Sansa wedding.
I can believe, what necklace was she wearing? Did they pick one?
I wasn't paying attention.
Because I remember in the first
she may first not have episode even been wearing
season.
A necklace.
Yeah, the first episode of the season, they had some trouble picking.
That's right. But this does harken back to the Sansa Tyrion wedding, where the ritual is to put your cloak over the bride to commemorate you providing her protection or something like that. Since Tyrion's so short, he had to get a stool, and Joffrey made an ass.
This does provide a nice contrast to that, too, because at that wedding, everyone was either quiet or they were snickering. So the entire thing was like super...
It was a joke.
Yeah, it was a super farce. Everyone was either, it was clearly a farce, and you could see it in just about everyone's face. This one, people seemed happy, they seemed excited.
Except for Sansa.
Well,
she didn't seem very impressed.
I don't think she's going to be impressed by much here, so.
You know, also, when they turned around and kind of presented the bride and groom, it looked like there was a twitch in Margaery's face. Like, maybe she's not too thrilled about it either.
If I was, you know, being married off to a psychopath, I'm sure she's I don't think. Yeah.
You know, it's a power play, right? It's a power play.
Yeah. I don't think she's marrying for love. That's for sure.
But after the wedding, we see Tywin and Lady Olenna Tyrell walking back, and they're discussing how expensive the damn wedding is. Of course, Tywin's not happy about it. But Olenna's like, you don't worry about it. I paid my half. And there's a pretty funny line there where it's like, Lady Tyrell says, no, your heartfelt thank you is its own reward. She is full of the best one-liners and quips.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to get much of that from Tywin.
No. And so they're having a carnival, like, a wedding reception or whatever. Every time I saw those fire breathers or whatever, I kept hoping that somebody would be set on fire. Hopefully Joffrey.
Yeah.
Should have been set on fire. They missed an opportunity there. And we see everybody sitting down for dinner. Bronn comes up to Tyrion, and he reports that, hey, he's delivered Shae to the boat. The boat has set sail.
Tywin still seems pretty worried.
Tyrion doesn't seem to believe him.
Yeah, Tyrion, sorry.
Tyrion doesn't seem to believe him, but, you know, Bronn's like, hey, I did it. Now just go drink until it feels like you made the right decision.
Another great line.
Yeah. Bronn is an excellent character. I don't know how he's portrayed in the books, but in the television series, he's awesome. Now, after that, we see Tyrion and Pod walking past a contortionist, and you can also see Oberyn and Lady Sand walking up. Did you see what Pod was doing?
Yeah, he's checking that contortionist out.
Yeah, I thought he was going to break his neck trying to see how she was bent over. Bent over herself. But then, the moment I knew someone was going to die was when Lady Olenna comes up to Sansa and is sort of like apologizing for kind of just the shit that's happened. Her brother dying.
Yeah, well, that's already after...
It's after everybody's seated, but it's when... Not everybody's seated. And then she excuses herself because she wants to go eat the food that she paid for.
Yeah.
But she says a line. And this line is the thing that's told me, okay, someone's dying and it's probably going to be Joffrey. And that line is, war is war, but killing a man at a wedding... horrid. What sort of monster would do such a thing? And that just, I was like, ah, you might as well, you know, put a big sign up saying Joffrey's gonna die.
I'm not sure how true it is. My friend mentioned that he knew exactly who was dying and that someone was going to die during this episode because R.R. Martin apparently tweeted, "Thank or you're welcome."
Well, that could mean anything. Besides, that asshole's writing whole books of spoilers for this television series. What does he think he's doing?
I don't know. I don't know.
But then that's when, I believe that's when we have an announcement, right? So, there's an announcement.
I think a couple of things happen first.
Excuse me,
first,
yeah.
The whole thing with Oberyn and Tyrell locking eyes there. Nice little love interest gaining.
Oh, that's right. Oberyn and Loras, they kind of recognize each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about recognize, but there's some doe eyes going on there.
No, but... Oh, I know what it was. Dantus, Sir Dantus, was not entertaining enough, and so Joffrey said, you know, like a gold lion or something to the first person to knock the hat off Sir Dantus.
Oh.
Which caused Marge to stand up and do damage control. You know, like, hey, we have an announcement to make, right?
Yeah.
So, and the announcement is...
They're going to be giving out the scraps to the poorest people in the city.
Oh, that's just like Marjorie.
Yeah, it's just like Joffrey to allow that to happen and take all the credit for it.
Yeah, well, she gives him the credit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't take it, but she is always giving him the credit. Because that assuages... That allows her to manipulate him to do good things like this.
And gain some goodwill from the people.
Right. I don't think anybody's fooled.
Hopefully, no.
Well, actually, knowing how American politics work,
yeah,
you know...
Yeah, you're right.
There's probably all sorts of fucking idiots out there. It's like, Joffrey's the best king we've ever had! So, I don't know. Just making an observation.
This goes back to, did you see what happened, though? They play in some nice music. Marjorie leans forward to really get into it and starts listening to it, and she seems to be enjoying it. And Joffrey just tosses a handful of coins at the musicians, like, get out of here.
Really? I didn't think she was enjoying it.
It seemed like she was leaning forward to enjoy it.
I thought that's why he threw the coins, to get rid of them.
Nah, he seemed super restless. Like, that music was just unleashing the beast.
Well, I seen look at Marjorie, but I didn't think she was interested. I thought she was bored with it too, and that's why he got rid of them.
Oh, that seemed like she was...
Well, we may have to rewatch that scene.
Yeah.
Because it's either he's being a dick to her...
Which is like him.
Or he's trying to, you know, keep her happy, which doesn't really matter anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't really matter anymore.
So yeah, and I think then we get the Oberyn-Loras connection, where they kind of, you know... They share winks.
And a nice little chat with Jaime right after.
So Jaime comes up and talks with Loras about how you're not going to marry Cersei. Because if you do, she's going to kill you in your sleep. And if you put a baby in her, before she kills you in your sleep, she'll kill that too.
And that brings up a point there, because I don't, like, they made a distinction or a point in the book that every time Robert actually got her pregnant with one of his kids, she took care of that.
Yeah, I think they almost alluded to it in, like, it was a very small mention of it in the television series. Or maybe it was just, I remember discussing it on an earlier podcast.
Yeah.
Man, Loras kind of does a under-the-belt shot, right? So
yeah.
He's like, well, you're not going to marry her either.
And just kind of slaps him and walks away.
I know, it's great. Plenty of people in the know.
Yeah.
And then after that, we see Brienne coming up and saying congratulations to the king and queen. And that's when Joffrey, you know, this must be a rumor that is held by a lot of people. A lot of people think Brienne assassinated Renly, right?
Yeah.
but it was a shadow baby. And so, of course, Marge, to keep Brienne from feeling slighted, says, oh no, she wasn't involved in that. And then, of course, that gives Joffrey the opportunity to make fun of her. Well, you know, like, any man that would have done that, I would have knighted or something like that.
Yeah.
So then, you know, she excuses herself, which, and on her way back, she's intercepted by Cersei.
And they have a nice little chat.
Yeah, because Cersei's heard some rumors, right? What's she, you know, what's
she just comes
at?
Right out and throws it out there. Hey, you love Jaime.
Yeah, well, you know, there's some, you know, stuff that Brienne was saying. But yeah, then she does. She's like, well, you love him. And Brienne does not.
She doesn't give any kind of response at all. She seems kind of shocked, like she's trying to work through it herself right there on the spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, just kind of now, bam. Cersei makes a comment like, it must be nice just to serve whoever the hell you want, right? You
know, yeah.
Serving Renly, then you serve Catelyn Stark.
Now you're back
here. Now you're
serving
my brother. And you're like, you know, she's like, I'm, you know.
I don't serve your brother. I serve the king.
Yeah.
Or no, was it the king?
I don't think she said anything besides I don't serve your brother.
Oh, yeah.
But you love him. And then that's, you know, it's kind of like, and then there's an awkward silence and then she leaves. So another thing to piss Cersei off, right?
Oh, yeah. This is building.
It does build. So she finds Maester Pycelle, right, being a lecherous bastard, and tells him to go do what?
I guess she wants him to go and order the cooks to throw out all the scraps to the dogs.
Yeah, put it, you know, send it to the kennel.
And this harkens back, because you see when Marjorie steps up to give that whole announcement and then actually gives it, you see Cersei shoot her a dirty look.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's obvious that she's not happy with Marjorie.
Yeah.
She came out and plainly stated it in the conversation to Jaime on the first episode.
This is a bit much.
But yeah, so she's directly undermining the queen.
Yeah.
Marge is the queen. Cersei is not. And of course, that's what Maester Pycelle says. Well, you know, the queen said. And then I think we have a little bit of confusion there, because I'm pretty sure she's like, the queen's telling you to go throw it to the dogs.
Yeah, you're under the impression that she means herself.
I very much think Cersei's calling herself the queen.
And I think that she means queen as in, like, you better lie and say that it's Marjorie the one who told you to do this.
Right, because she threatens him. Yeah. Threatens him, you know, to do worse things than what Tyrion did when Tyrion threw him in the dungeon. But yeah, no, I think that she's calling herself the queen. So.
I think there could be a third there, too. Connotation.
What's the third connotation?
That she's the one that poisoned Joffrey here at the end, and that she wants to be queen again.
Oh.
So she was queen. Now she wants to be queen again. Like, she continue.
That's interesting. I thought you said she wouldn't poison her own kid.
I never said that.
Yeah, I thought that was one of my predictions last episode.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because I said, who would be the most interesting thing? And I mentioned Cersei.
I would definitely rather see him stabbed. That's for damn sure.
Well, yeah, I definitely would rather see him...
in as brutal of a fashion as anyone can manage.
Sodomize with a Valyrian steel. That's what I think. But he died.
Yeah, because Cersei's already had a hand. She's a fair poisoner at this point. She poisoned Jon Arryn.
Yeah. So then she comes walking back from Pycelle, meets up with her father, Tywin. Tywin's like, well, you seem in an awful good mood, but I'm not going to ask why. You know, I think if he asked why more often, maybe things wouldn't be as fucked up as they are.
Yeah, that's probably a general rule for him. Go ahead and
pry a little, dude.
Yeah, just pry a little.
But as they're walking, they run into...
Oberon.
That's right. They run into Oberon and Ilaria Sand, which Sand must be the bastard name for people from Dorne.
Yeah.
Cersei says, I've never met a Sand. They didn't exist or something. And then Ilaria says, well, there's 10,000 of us in Dorne. And which kind of launches a verbal sparring between Oberon and Tywin, right?
And mostly Oberon and Cersei. Tywin seems to jump in there to reinforce her, but...
You're right, he kind of jumps in at the end. But you're right, it is between Oberon and Cersei. Who do you think came out on top in this verbal sparring?
I definitely think Oberon came out on top.
I agree. Because the kind of the closing argument was, you know, that the lords here don't have time to do the, you know, to fuck around like all the lords in Dorne do.
He said in one place, they work pretty hard. And in the other, they usually, it's just a difference in culture. They usually don't think that rape and murder are a good thing.
Oh, that's right, yeah. It's like some people think that raping and murdering women and children is bad. Which, of course, Charles Dance, like, gives the most evil stare. It was definitely, if something could be called the evil eye, that was it.
Yeah.
And Oberyn got it.
And that was a nice dig at Cersei there, too. Because, reminding her that where her daughter...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Where her daughter was then sent to. It's a good thing your daughter was sent to the latter.
We find out something about the culture of Dorne here. If we take Ilaria at her word, bastards aren't really despised in Dorne like they are in Westeros, in this part of Westeros.
Yeah, it seems they're a bit more accepted.
Right, because, you know, there are a lot of them because they're born out of passion, as Oberyn said.
Just for everyone, there was some fish shaking there.
There was some fish. I shook my fist. Back to some Joffrey dumbassery. So Joffrey has, he's tired. He's tired of all the fun people are having, right?
Yeah.
Weddings are a historic occasion, and then it's time for people to learn their history. And of course, he brings out a bunch of dwarves that do a mock Battle of the Kings. Tyrion is oh so pleased about.
But no one else is.
Well, there is some laughter. Well, no one important anyways, but there's some laughter from the peanut gallery for sure.
Yeah.
The peanut galleries.
For all the important people, and blank hard stares. That's this.
Cersei, Joffrey, and the peanut gallery are loving this, but everybody else is like, this is bad.
This is distasteful, this is...
Well, one, it's making Sansa kind of relive the horrors that's happened to her brother.
Yeah.
Two...
It makes fun of Renly, who a lot of people there were actually
friends because all the Tyrells were connected to Renly Baratheon at one point. Probably the biggest jab at Tyrion, because, you know, these are dwarves being poked fun at, and he's a dwarf. And
he even mentions to pay each one of them 20 gold after their performance.
That's right, because, you know, kind of taking care of his own. And that they'd have to figure out some way later to repay Joffrey for the entertainment. After the closing, so the mini-me, Joffrey, wins the war, and then Joffrey makes an announcement saying, there's got to be more takers, you know, or there's got to be more people out there that want to test me for the throne, right? Tyrion, maybe you can play someone. We have an extra costume or something like that.
Yeah, you'd be the next king to stand up.
And then Tyrion, of course, verbally skewers Joffrey in front of everybody, talking, basically impugns his honor as being the hero of the Blackwater, which prompts Joffrey to go over there and dump a goblet of wine on Tyrion's head. And of course, Tyrion tries to play it off. Oh, it's a shame that, you know, the wine spilled. Joffrey's like, I didn't spill it. It was no accident. And this goes into a kind of a prolonged thing where Joffrey is trying to embarrass Tyrion in front of everybody by making him his cupbearer.
This just furthers that whole thing. Now you see dead silence. No one's even laughing.
Oh, yeah. No one is laughing. The only person smiling is Cersei.
Yeah, she's loving this.
Yeah, she is definitely loving it. And, you know, Joffrey kicks the goblet. Sansa kind of tries to help Tyrion out by recovering the goblet.
And then good old Marjorie.
Marjorie is on damage control again. Man, she's going to be doing a lot of this.
Not for very long.
She would have been doing a lot of it.
If she had stayed married to Joffrey, she would have been doing a lot of it.
So they bring out a big fake pie, and Joffrey releases doves.
Not all of them made it out of that.
Yeah, not all of them made it. And so he's eating the pie. He tells his cupbearer, who is trying to leave, right? So as he's doing this whole thing, Tyrion takes the opportunity to cut the hell out of there before any further embarrassment.
He should have ran. I should have.
He was abandoned not quite all fast ran. Enough.
No.
Because Joffrey knew he didn't have to turn around. He's like, oh, uncle, where are you going? And, you know, forces him to come back to get the goblet and fill it back up and hand it to him. And then, of course, Joffrey's trying to chug it down just so he can make Tyrion do more work. But Tyrion doesn't have to refill his cup again, because at that point, he starts choking.
Favorite part of the episode.
This is my favorite part of the episode, too.
I could watch him choke for a full half an episode, just watching him choke and turn purple.
It was a pretty glorious poisoning.
Yeah.
I must say, it was a pretty glorious poisoning, but I am still disappointed.
Disappointed?
Yeah, because his death needed to be far more brutal than this. Far more.
I think everyone agreed that he did not get the full extent of what he deserved.
Still, I'm happy. I'm happy he's dead. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. But there's a few other details. Dantos comes up. Former Ser Dantos, the current court jester, comes up and tells Sansa, if you want to live, come with me. Doing his best Schwarzenegger impression, I guess.
Yeah.
Terminator. And then Joffrey kind of accuses Tyrion, you know, as he points on his dying breath.
But Tyrion seems perplexed by the
indictment. Oh, yeah, he's like, you know, what the hell's going on? And then Cersei, of course, demands that he be taken. Did you see the spittle fly from her face as she's yelling?
Oh, yeah. I still think she poisoned.
You still think she did it?
Yeah.
Well, it remains to be determined.
This is a nice way for her to pin the blame on somebody else, though.
It is a nice way to pin the blame on somebody, because now there's probably going to be a power struggle, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I think there's going to be a power struggle between House Tyrell and House Lannister, because Margaery is queen, but they didn't consummate the marriage, right?
Yeah.
So, but I don't see Marge giving up her position of queen.
No.
I just don't see it happening.
There's a lot of Lannister people at the capital, though, so we'll see if they get taken.
Yeah, it'll be... I wonder how Lannisters will play it out. Which brings us, of course, to the who did it. Who done it?
I don't know, but I'd like to give them a dollar or two.
Reward that motherfucker! One obvious suspect is Dantus, right? So yeah. He's been at the butt of all of Joffrey's jokes, was almost killed. There's a relationship established between Dantus and Sansa, not a sexual one, but one of, you know, thanks and gratitude. You know, Sansa saved his life. I can see him returning the favor by poisoning Joffrey. Appeared on scene and said, hey, you know, if you want to survive, you have to come with me. We don't know how that played out. I don't think Sansa's going to leave.
No, not if Tyrion's still there. I think she,
she's kind of committed, right?
Yeah.
Even though she's on the whole adolescent, I'm not going to eat anything bullshit. But I think she's kind of committed to staying there. Another suspect might be House Tyrell, though I don't see them doing it this soon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense for them to do it this soon.
Yeah, because now there's questions.
The only person that makes sense to do it this soon is Marge, because, you know, she doesn't want to actually fucking lay with this guy.
Yeah. I don't blame her there.
Yeah, but it's... I can imagine. I think that's still unlikely. Another suspect would be Oberyn.
I don't think it's Oberyn. Someone told us they called him the Viper, but I think that has more to do with his speed, not necessarily poison. I can't see him using poison.
His personality that they've displayed on the television show doesn't make me think he'd use poison. And also, even though it would be an eye for an eye to kill another child... I mean, because Joffrey's still kind of a child.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as the
guy. It doesn't strike me as that would not be the way to handle that.
He seems to be the kind of person who strikes his enemies directly.
Right, so if he was going to do something, he'd stick a sword or a dagger into Tywin or the Mountain or whoever.
Yeah, somebody who had a hand in something.
So, yeah, I think Oberyn's unlikely. But, of course, with this murder, the Lannisters are going to be all over everyone. So I wouldn't be surprised if we open the next episode and see everybody in the dungeon. Together. With the spider coming and giving everybody water. I don't know. So,
Maybe Varys finally took a hand.
You know, I had in my notes, I was like, because there's a point in there where he gives this look in the crowd, right? Like, I'm like, does he know something? Does Varys know something?
I don't know. Varys always knows something.
He always knows something for sure. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know who else is a player in the city. I mean, obviously there could be any number of spies, you know. Maybe a caterer did it. Maybe the dwarves did it. I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the episode. So let's talk about your 2-week challenge, Jesse. About how far are you into it? This has been about a week.
Yeah. As of Monday, I was about 600 pages or so through the first book. And then I just lost all momentum. And I'm not going to finish reading them. Like, it's just not worth the effort.
Really?
Yeah. They're not that... I read some dry books. The Wheel of Time has some very dry parts. And these books just don't strike. They're just not that good. They're a bit of a slog, especially having seen as much of the show as I already have. It's just not worth it.
Are you telling me that George R. R. Martin is a good editor?
I don't know.
Would a good editor save that?
I don't know.
See, I think you
encountered... I mean, the pacing and the details, it's good, but...
You encountered the same... I think I saw that early on, because I didn't even get past the first chapter when I tried to read it. And I was like, I just cannot... Because I'm an avid reader, all right? I read lots of stuff. But there's just something about the voice of that book. I just did not... It just did not appeal to me. So, okay. So Jesse failed the 2-week challenge.
Yeah, I'm not going to finish reading
it. Because he's surrendering. You know what that means? That means that the cast is going to stay completely book virgin.
That means we're going to have a lot more speculation.
Yeah, we'll have a lot more speculation, and no one will know if I'm on base or not, except for the listeners who are listening to us. And so, listeners, as a point, please keep any spoilery information out of the feedback. We've enjoyed some feedback so far. Most of it is, you know, kind of introductory. I'm glad you're recording again. We like the new guy, Jesse.
Thank you. Well, it's very much appreciated. I'm having a blast so far, and you all are pretty great.
We've got a couple complaints about our sound quality, which we're working on. I understand that the sound quality is not perfect. That's because I've got these condenser microphones, and they tend to pick up everything in the room, and, you know, lawnmowers and cars that are driving by. But we have some new stuff on order, a new mixing board, some new mics. some mic stands, pop filters, the whole nine yards. So our audio should be steadily improving over the course of the season. Hopefully I'll get it dialed in real early.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think everybody was surprised because I actually called Jeffrey's death on Facebook and, you know, Twitter and Google Plus there. I started the Game of Thrones death pool, and I was like, who's your money on? Mine's on Joffrey.
He is the first death here.
Bam! So now we have to figure out who else is going to die this season. I don't know.
My vote's on most of the Lannisters.
I'm hoping Shay.
I'm voting for the rest of the Lannisters.
The rest? Nah.
My vote's on Tywin next.
Tywin?
I think Oberon's going to get him a piece of Tywin.
Tywin might die next. He might die this season. People who aren't going to die, Tyrion won't die. I don't think Jaime's going to die. Cersei could die. Not this season. They may die eventually, but Jaime and Tyrion, they'll survive this season. Tywin, Cersei, they're up for grabs.
They've done a good job at making us feel sympathy for Jaime.
Yeah. But well, there's more story to tell of that character before you kill him.
But he still threw a kid out a window, so...
He did. I'm not saying does he deserve to die. I'm just saying he's not going to die. Not this season.
Not until they get a little bit more of his story, at least.
Yeah, you know, he's got to be on his way. He's got to be peaking, right? And then George R. R. Martin will kill him off.
That's true.
As always, this is the Faceless Men.
Valor Magulus.
All men must die. Remember, you can reach us at facelessmencast@gmail.com. Please leave us feedback on our iTunes. You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/facelessmencast. You can reach us on Twitter @facelessmencast. And you can search for us on Google Plus. We don't quite have the vanity URL yet, but just look for the Faceless Men podcast on Google Plus. Thank you for listening.
Also, I know some people were asking me about how I thought these books stacked up with most of the other books I've read. And I would have to say that, if you can read these, you can probably read The Wheel of Time or any of those others. And I think the biggest reason that I'm not reading these is probably because of how much of the episode, like how true and kind of the spirit that comes across in the shows is true to the books. So it's really not worth the effort of some of the drier parts to finish these books.
Oh, so you think the television series captures the essence of the show?
So far from what I've read, yeah.
And the stuff that it doesn't capture is, like, useless bullshit that you don't want to experience.
Or back filler information, or, like, yeah. For the most part, I like the way it puts emphasis on certain things more in the show. But it seems like in the book, most of the other emphasis is on extra information.
Oh, so there's a lot of exposition then?
Yeah.
Information dump?
Yeah, such as, like, you know, the whole surrounding thing about what happened when Robert Baratheon and Ned Stark originally took the city, how their inner whole relationship with the Lannisters got started, that kind of stuff. I don't feel that's all that necessary information.
Right.
But it does provide, I mean, for reading, it's kind of nice. It's really nice.
Okay.
It fills in gaps, but if you really like fantasy, and one of the best fantasy series I've read is probably Way of the Shadows by Brent Weeks.
Oh yeah? What do you think about Brandon Sanderson?
I enjoy Brandon Sanderson. I really actually like a lot of his books. I read Mistborn, I've read Steelheart, I think I've read more of him, and The Way of the King series. I really like the two books he's got out so far.
Okay.
I've read both of those. Way of the Kings and Words of Radiance. And then also I've read the whole Wheel of Time series and he finished that, so.
Well, bibliophiles, I have nothing to offer you on the fantasy edge. I haven't read a fantasy novel in quite some time. I tend to be wrapped up right now with sci-fi stuff, which is not relevant to this cast, so I won't even bore you with the details. But, you know, yeah, so we had some listeners that were requesting Jesse's feedback on similar books that they might enjoy.
If you like the tone and pacing, I'd suggest Wheel of Time.
Really?
If you can slog through,
because I tried reading The Wheel of Time too and didn't like it.
It's definitely got the breadth and the depth of characters that this book series brings.
Okay.
So.
Well, thanks for that, Jesse.